Pettersson's in. Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk! What a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance. Great save by Markstrom.
Here's Kachuk. Oh, what a save by Demko.
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Wednesday? Hope you're off to a great start. Cinco de Mayo. Have a great day. We're going to make it better. How you doing today, Karen?
I'm doing great. I am doing wonderful, Scott. I thought it was going to come in hot like the New York Rangers came in hot yesterday. A little boom goes the dynamite from them. I am, however, dealing with one of those hazards from working from home today. Usually it's the lawnmower or the leaf blower or something, and you can actually hear it on air. I got a smell coming from the kitchen, and I've gone through the fridge. I've thrown the garbage out on the balcony and closed the door and stuff, but it's still here, and I'm trying to figure out what it is, and I can't figure it out. Like, this is totally a 2020-2021 problem. Like, okay, I sit next to the kitchen. I really can't work anywhere else, and I'm dealing with this. So I sprayed some Febreze near me in the kitchen, not in the fridge, but around the fridge, around the garbage. So I'm hoping to not be distracted today, but if you see me or you hear me just kind of waver on anything, it's because I'm still trying to figure out what the smell is. It's annoying me.
Good news. We have not been able to get the app to have some sort of scent come through it. So you will not have to deal with that if you're listening on the app or if you happen to be listening on your radio. Scott Rintoul, Karen Sermon, Tom Wilson, still the hot name of the day. Because of what you mentioned, the New York Rangers. Wilson comes out throwing punches. The Rangers believed the league would punch back. And when it didn't, the Rangers decided to throw a public uppercut at the NHL yesterday. They were unsatisfied with the NHL's judgment after Wilson started a goalmouth fracas. It ended Artemi Panarin's season. The Rangers took to social media. They put the league on blast. Here was the statement. I'm sure most of you have seen it. But here's the statement that they sent to any media outlet they could find. And then to the general public on social media. The New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender with a long history of these types of acts. We find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action, suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL head of player safety George Parros and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role. Your reaction, Ms. Sermon?
Well, when I saw it yesterday, again, like I said off the top, I was like, and I think I texted this to you and our producer Jamie and said, like, boom goes the dynamite. Like, this is the New York Rangers throwing down the gauntlet. A little over dramatic in my point. Horrifying act of violence. That's a pretty significant term to what he did. Do I agree with what he did? No, but it's a little, you know, intense. Dereliction of duty. I had to go look up what dereliction is in terms of duty. But I was just shocked, like, this is an NHL team, Scott, and it's the Rangers. Like, it's not, no offense to the Florida Panthers or, I don't know, even the Anaheim Ducks or the LA Kings. Like, this is a team that holds a lot of cachet, shall we say, around the league. And they're calling for someone to be fired because of this. Like,
Are they?
Well,
is that what they're really doing?
Unfit to continue in his current role. I think that's pretty obvious in terms of, well, they didn't come out and say he deserves to be fired for it, but they are saying he is unfit to do his job. So I think if you read between the lines, there's a little of calling for some change there. Yeah.
This is the Tom Wilson should never play hockey again statement. This is the equivalent of that. Because those who saw what Tom Wilson did, there were some that wanted to go full on, never play again, hazard to the league. He doesn't ever deserve to wear a jersey in the National Hockey League. That's the outlier. But the New York Rangers decided we'll do the same thing and we'll target George Parros. Now, nobody actually thinks George Parros is going to be fired by the league. And if you had a long list of, hey, here's where he screwed up, maybe you're building a case. The reason they did this is just to draw a whole bunch of attention. Because if they just put out a statement that says, we think this is bad, we think he should have been suspended, we're playing tomorrow night's game under protest, it gets no attention. But by that last part of the statement, hey, he's unfit to continue in his role, this is a dereliction of duty, it draws attention. And they know they're probably going to get slapped with a hefty fine here. Elliot Friedman said as much when he was on Sportsnet 650 yesterday. Have a listen.
You've got to, I think you've got to see a fine there somewhere. You know, as for Parros himself, You know, someone made a good point to me that if you really think, if you really want George Parros out, that's not the way to do it. Like, Gary Bettman is going to look at that and he's going to get his back up and he's going to say, you think you're going to bully me into moving out someone? Not a chance. So I would say there's even less chance, unless Parros wanted to go, I would say there's even less chance of, you know, the league wanting to make a move after something like that. It's someone who knows Bettman, and the more I thought about it, knowing Bettman myself, it's a really good point that that's not the kind of thing that he would respond to or allow to intimidate him into something different.
The last thing we know, Scott, that Gary Bettman likes to do is be told what to do, right? Like, I mean, he's not going to do anything about this. Like you said, it's going to be a fine for the Rangers. They knew that going into this. They don't care. They just wanted to draw a spotlight to this, the fact that they thought this was wrong. They also want to draw a spotlight to the fact that, yeah, there's only three games left in the season, but our star player is gone for the year. And that happened as a result of this play. And maybe the punishment shouldn't be determined based on the injury in this case, but still, it's like they just wanted to draw attention to the fact that, look, we don't agree with this, and we definitely don't agree with this, and our star player's out.
It's calling out the league. It's not calling out George Parros here. Who does George Parros take his marching orders from? He takes it from Gary Bettman. He takes it from the owners. If they wanted to suspend Tom Wilson, if there was an uproar from ownership, if there was an uproar from the league itself, they could have suspended Tom Wilson. They chose not to do that. And here's the reason, in my opinion, why. Because if they go down the suspension road, which wouldn't have been that hard, like all the people on the side saying, hey, it's not a suspendable act. You can't do that. You see this type of thing every night. No, they could have. They've done this before. They've said things like, not a hockey act. We don't consider that a part of normal everyday hockey. So they can use that language and find reason to suspend Tom Wilson. If they did that, they're going to have to slap him with a hefty suspension. It couldn't just be the end of the regular season. That doesn't do anything. So you probably have to go to, you're done for the first round of the playoffs. They probably at league office went, that's a little much for us. I know that there's a lot of people in the general public that would have been just fine with that, but our fraternity doesn't think it needs to be that much. He probably deserves something, but because he's a repeat offender and because he has this rap sheet, we can't quite go halfway, which is what we'd like to do here, so we're not going to do anything at all. I don't think it's the right move personally, but that's how I see it having played out.
Yeah, I don't think it's the right move either, Scott. Like, we went through this yesterday, and I totally think that he should have been suspended. I do think in this instance, you have to look at the offender himself. Tom Wilson has put himself in this position to be viewed differently. He just has because of his acts in the past. And this is what I was thinking, Scott. You know the crowd that says he shouldn't have been suspended? Like, this is fine. It was just a scrum. It was an act of hockey. Do you think there would have been any outrage from them if he had been suspended? Honestly? No, because it would have been the league. It's Tom Wilson, the league. They had to do something, and they did. Like, that's where I look at this. So I honestly don't think you would have heard any outrage if he had been suspended, maybe except for Washington Capitals fans.
Disagree. I do think you would have had plenty of people. All those people that came to the defense yesterday of what happened, I think all of those people would have said, what's this league come to? We are overanalyzing everything. This is the media driving the hockey minds. This is not the actual game. This is somewhat of an accepted practice. Maybe cross the line a little, but we got to leave that stuff in the game. Yep, you would have heard people bouncing back on that. Karen, how many texts did we get yesterday in the inbox saying, the sport's gotten soft. Why are we even talking about this? We got a ton of them. I don't agree with them, but we got a ton of those yesterday.
But I just think if the league had said, okay, it's Tom Wilson, it's not a hockey act, we don't want this in the game, I honestly don't think you would have heard as much of an outcome or an outrage from the people who say today that it was right, this is part of the game. I honestly just don't. I mean, it's kind of a moot point, but I think when it comes to Tom Wilson, I think if he had been suspended, people would have been going, oh yeah, his history shows that he's due. Like, it's worth it.
A couple of interesting clips from this morning with regards to the story. First, this one from Chris Johnson, who made a couple of appearances across Sportsnet Radio this morning. And the NHL insider had this to say about the interaction that there has been about the NHL's, from the NHL's watchdog, who is George Parros at the top of that, and Tom Wilson himself. Here's CJ.
I really hope nothing happens tonight that goes too wild or anything like that, but it's now more of a possibility, I think, because the league didn't step in this case and go after Tom Wilson. And I think there's a larger Tom Wilson question, right? I mean,
well, yeah.
How do you rehabilitate him? How do you truly get through to him? Is it throwing a 30-game suspension at him at some point and you know, costing him millions of dollars? Is there some other manner to do it? Because what's interesting in his specific instance is, you know, a couple of years ago, George Karros twice went and had face-to-face meetings with him and showed him video and tried, you know, I think they've tried in some maybe, you know, non-punitive ways to get through to him. And I just don't see it. I mean, he was recklessly out of control in that moment. And, you know, obviously, you know, I don't think we have to really even debate his merits as a hockey player anymore. He's plays with their top players. He's been relatively productive in those roles, but, you know, it feels like he's someone at any moment that could kind of go off and do something he shouldn't do. And, you know, you gotta find a way, I guess, to curb that before it happens, I think.
A lot of texts coming in right now, some on the Tom Wilson side, some on the other side. I knew we'd get this text as well about Sidney Crosby last night. I'll get to that one in just a second. Someone says, I don't necessarily mind Wilson's interaction with Panarin. I feel it's more about his punch to the head of Buchnevich as he's laying on the ice. Another, keep hockey tough. Tom Wilson should not be suspended. I hope Tom Wilson beats the living daylights out of five or six of those whiny piss baby New York Rangers, says Greg. Wilson is the new Matt Cook, says Leaf hater Steve, who was asked about this yesterday, and Matt Cook was on the side of, yep, this is something you got to get out of the game. I used to think the way Tom Wilson did. It took me a really long time to change, but I finally did. It can happen.
Yeah, and he also said, Matt Cook, that the stigma around him is still, you know, like the stench on him is still kind of there. He's trying to get, hoping to get into coaching, but he has to kind of shed the player that he was or the reputation he had, Scott. And I went back and watched some of those Matt Cook elbows that he liked to throw. Oh my goodness, I forgot how vicious some of those elbows were when he was playing the game. Tom Wilson, a little different in terms of how he goes about things, but, you know, it's like someone texting in saying that I'm completely out to lunch on this, and I think thinks not the fact that I think that Tom Wilson should have been suspended, but in terms of the reaction going the other way. I look at this, Scott, as a guy who he needs something to get through to him that this is not okay. And I don't know if there is anything at this point. He's spoken to George Parros twice in person, gone over video, and been like, you can't do this. He said that I need to change because my team needs me. Because, like that clip said with CJ, he's a very productive player when he's playing his game. And I think there's a point where the league has to step in and say, okay, you can't do this anymore. You're going to hurt somebody. And they had a chance to do it right here, and they dropped the ball.
There is a question about what Sidney Crosby did last night to Travis Konecny. They're different. They're different acts, and not because Sidney Crosby's a star player and he's the one doing the punishing in this case. Here's why I see them as completely different acts. For those who think that Artemi Panarin deserved what he got because he went into the scrum, that means you think anything's allowed. That means you think that if Connor McDavid goes into a scrum to tie somebody up, which is what Panarin was doing there. Like, there is a difference between being what the Big Lebowski would refer to as a conscientious objector and I'm going in there because I want to mix it up. Panarin goes into that trying to be a conscientious objector. Now, maybe Wilson doesn't know that when he first feels Panarin on his back. He has no idea who it is. Once they get up, that's to me where things could have changed. Because I talked to some NHLers yesterday, ex-NHL players, and do you know what every single one of them said to me? You know. Even if you don't know who the person is, you can feel right away when you grab somebody if you're way stronger than them or the opposite. That person's way stronger than you. So Panarin didn't go in there looking for any type of fight. He's in there trying to settle things down. What happened with Crosby and Konecny last night is different to me because Konecny initiates the entire exchange. He's got Sidney Crosby in a headlock on the ice. He's got him in a headlock on the ice to the extent that Crosby's helmet comes off. Yeah. And then Crosby decides, okay, now I'm engaging you. Let's go. You just did this to me. I'm in. So in that case, you've got one person who decided I'm a willing combatant and the other person who said, now I'm a willing combatant as well. Did Crosby go a little too far? Yep. And if Crosby got a $5,000 fine, that's to me where a fine is an appropriate action.
Well, and wasn't Crosby, too, also defending the fact that didn't Konecny slewfoot Brandon Rust earlier on the play, Scott, too? Like, wasn't it a situation where he was defending his teammate? And again, you said willing combatants, and Panarin wasn't. And it's just, again, like, people, go back and watch it. Like, if I'm sorry, he grabs his hair, puts him to the ground, then he sucker punches him on the ground again, then he picks him up and ragdoll him and looks to push him to the ground again. Nothing in that is a hockey scrum, and Panarin did not willingly go into it knowing, okay, I'm going to fight this guy and expect this to happen. It just didn't, that's not the case. And just to go back to what the New York Rangers did, Scott, they're calling the NHL out because they didn't get the acceptable action that they wanted in terms of this. And, like, I'm a little concerned about what's going to happen tonight. I do think both teams have probably got a phone call from the league and a talking to, being like, this is going to be called tight. Anything out of the ordinary that starts to happen, you know, referees are going to step in. You know, if anything untowards happens and very dangerous, you guys are going to be, there's going to be some, probably some punishment in that terms. But, I mean, you had a chance to quell this when you could have, and you didn't. And there's a potential today that we could see something on the ice tonight between the Rangers and Capitals that we're going to wake up tomorrow and have another talking point.
The only way that happens is if the Rangers call somebody up to do something, which I doubt they're going to do.
Or they go after a skilled player.
But who on their roster is going to go after a skilled player? That's part of the issue here, and that's part of what people pointed out after the game the other night, Karen. They don't have that player on their roster to do it. Now, you can go out and you can cheap shot someone, but I doubt that the Rangers are going to go after it that way. Interestingly enough, there's going to be a number of players for the Capitals who are not playing in this game tonight. If Jenny Kuznetsov, for disciplinary reasons, same with Ilya Samsonov, he's a goaltender, so it's a little bit different there. Ovechkin's not going to play in this game tonight either. He tried to play the other night, got out there on the ice. Ovi can generally handle himself. But again, there's just another player who's out of the lineup. I know the name that everybody circled saying, well, if you wanted retribution, Nick Backstrom's your guy. I doubt we see much tonight. I doubt we see much.
I hope so. I hope you're right, because I don't like that frontier justice. I don't like the code. You know, I don't like that. But maybe the code in this, I don't know. I don't want to go back and say, like, I told you so tomorrow, Scott. In terms, like, I don't want to see anything dangerous.
This text comes in, I'm so bitter that there's no physicality in the game anymore. So when something happens that's a bit old school and creates bad blood and rivalry, I get excited. I guess I'm a product of the 80s, says this texter. I wish the Rangers had someone who could ruin Wilson. The posing afterward was in bad taste, and now he needs his teeth knocked down his throat. But he would look good in a Flames jersey, says this texter. And we had that come up in the 650, 650 inbox as well, saying, I just think it's worth pointing out. I believe it was Bob who said, I believe it's worth pointing out that 99.9% of Vancouver fans would take him in a Canucks uniform. No one is arguing that Tom Wilson isn't an extremely effective NHL player. There is nobody in this argument saying that. Like, no one's saying, ah, this guy doesn't belong in the NHL. It's quite the opposite. He's such a good NHL player that if he can curb this a little bit, just a little bit, it's just instead of going from a 2 to a 10 on the snap scale, go to a 6.
Like I said, Scott, he sees red, but he doesn't know when that red means a stop sign. He just sees fire and I have to go, go, go. And there's that a switch that snaps. Hey, Tom Wilson wears an A at times. You know who else wore an A at times? Matt Cook. I believe he had one on when he hit Ryan McDonagh with that elbow. Like, these players can be well-liked by their teammates from all intents and purposes. Chris Stewart, who was on, I believe it was during the intermissions of the Canucks-Edmonton game on Monday when this happened, and he said, you know what, like, he's a friend of mine, and he's a really good guy. But he's crossed the line in this case. And you can be a really good guy, Scott. We probably all know these people that, you know, and they're really good people, but if they have that switch that's flipped, you're like, get out of my way. I don't want to be anywhere near them right now because you have no idea what's going to happen. There's that anger switch, right? I mean, I know somebody like that. I don't want to be anywhere near that person when that happens, but generally speaking, pretty good person. So it's one of those things where Wilson, maybe you maybe want him on your team because he's good. He may be well-liked in the locker room, but at one point he's going to harm your team better than help them. And that's where he is right now, that line.
Joey in Richmond, obligatory Brad Marchand text on this subject. Next text, Panarin jumped on his back. Was he supposed to give him a piggyback ride? That would have been funny, actually. That would have been pretty good. You're my backpack. You can't do anything to me. That would have been pretty funny. If you're in a scrum, hits happen. Somebody says, it's not that hits happen in a scrum. It's the throwing him to the ice, punching him again when he's down, and then picking him up and throwing him down again. That's the issue.
Yes.
It's not the 6 on the snap scale. It's the 10 on the snap scale that we're talking about here.
He kept going and going and going, Scott. Like, it was just like, I don't know. I again, it's just something in him that he just can't stop it. and know when to draw that line. So you may want him on your team, Scott. You may like what he brings. I mean, he plays on the top line. He's can score goals. He can take hits. He can make hits. He can fight and stand up for players. But in the end, I mean, do you want a dangerous player on your team? And Tom Wilson has that dangerous aspect and reputation now.
Oh, you want him on your team. Absolutely, you want him on your team. Of course you do.
Well, there's a player that I have on my team, Scott, specifically the Oilers, that is not necessarily like that anymore, but was at the time. Like, there's Zach Cassian. He knows when to cross the line. But does he cross it as much as Tom Wilson has? At times. Not so much anymore, because I think he's learned his lesson.
He's not as good a player. Like, we can all agree with that.
No,
Tom Wilson's a much better player.
And I guess the more the better.
I'm saying that the people want Zach Cassian on their team as well. Like, the Zach Cassian we see now that he's made his, hopefully for him, final stop in the NHL and that he got himself a deal, that's the Cassian people have always wanted. And yeah, you're going to cross the line a little bit here. Andrew in White Rock mentions, and I hadn't seen this, Andrew, thank you for pointing out, Colton Orr has been called up for the Rangers, so maybe something happens tonight. We'll see. We will see what happens. I did want to get this clip in. Christopher Stieg, longtime NHLer, a guy who wasn't afraid to go into scrums, certainly not the biggest dude out there, but he wasn't afraid of getting a little greasy at times. Here's what Verstieg had to say about whether or not what's acceptable in the game needs to change and how the NHL is trying to grow or should be.
I'm not asking for the one way or the other. I'm looking now as a way, because our league, the stagnant rate of growth comparative to other leagues, looking at even MLS and all these leagues, if we're fine being where we are, then that's fine. Then keep going about it the same way. That's all I'm saying. If we want to get on to the other stage that these other sports are continually to go on, we need to start acting like it, and we need to start putting our players in a situation to succeed in order to get there. And I argue with ex-players all the time, because obviously they're all my friends. Because we went through this in the past doesn't mean it's right for the players to go through it today, okay? I have no problem with being punched in the head and fighting my whole career from 16 till 31. I have no problem with any of that. But what we knew then compared to what we know 10 years, 5 years to a year now, and seeing what actual fans want to watch in the game, they want to watch these players score. They still want to watch hits, and I love hitting. I want to see clean hits. I want to see battling. You know, you want to see emotion. You want to see all that. I want to see that. But what you see from these top-end players with their talent when they're at the top of the game, like Connor McDavid, he should be a global superstar.
Preach. That's all I got to say on that one. Perfect. Love it. Let's go.
Well, and this is the bigger talking point. We can get into it with Tim McAuliffe as well. What should you be selling? What do you want to sell? What do you want your game to be known for? And this doesn't happen every night. I don't want to go to that extreme. But there is still a certain amount of media and certain platforms out there that carry a lot of sway that when something like this happens, it gets far more attention than the skill in the game and where the game should be trending if you want to get more eyeballs, more people involved, that sort of thing. We can debate this throughout the course of the morning. 960, 960, 650, 650. Tim McAuliffe, he joins us every week, and he'll do so next on Rintoul and Sermon.
There, but somebody doesn't want to be my friend right now.
Karen, just like in the Tom Wilson situation, you can't take one example and paint the entire swath of the NHL Brotherhood with that brush.
Oh, I'm not. No, I'm
one text.
It very specific.
One text. It's an egregious text. I agree with you on that.
But, hey, why can't we be friends? Why can't we all just be friends?
We got Take the L coming up a little bit later on in the show. Tim McAuliffe is going to join us in just a couple minutes. I'll take the L right now on the Colton Orr thing. Someone texted in, hey, did you see that Colton Orr got called up? And the first thing that popped into my head when Andrew sent that was, he's not playing anymore, is he? Then I checked quickly on Twitter, and the first thing that came up was a tweet from Stephen Valiquette. I didn't realize it was done in jest. Yeah, I was actually right, my initial thought, but I didn't go with it. Yeah, Colton Orr is out of the game. He's coaching now. He's not called up to be a part of this tonight at MSG.
I looked at the Rangers lineup, Scott.
So I'll take the L right now, by the way.
Okay, sounds good. I looked at a couple of the Rangers players, and I'm just like, you're right. Like, first of all, I don't know who some of them are. And I'm like, I think maybe, I mean, Mika Zibanejad kind of has a little edge to him, but again, he's your top line center. Do you want him doing something like that? So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight. I just hope the NHL understands that because of what happened and what they didn't do, there could be some fallout and some retribution. And then how does that look for the league?
There are a bunch of different nuanced parts of this conversation. And I think this is the hard part because, like, the number of people who have sent in texts condemning Panarin or saying, that's what you get, that's a no-win situation to me. Like, there's a bunch of people who said, and this one comes in, I have a problem with the punch on the ground. I don't have a problem with him ragdolling Panarin around the ice when a guy comes after you who's half your size, prepared to get handled like a child. He didn't come after him. I think that's part of the problem that people are missing here. He didn't come after him. If you're Artemi Panarin, Tom Wilson starts this whole thing by punching Buchnevich in the head. Ryan Strom sees that and says, well, I can't have that. So he kind of tries to tackle Wilson off of Buchnevich. Wilson then starts to go after Strom. Panarin's standing there. And again, Strom's now on the ice at this point. So for the crowd that's, you got to defend your team, you bite off more than you can chew, Panarin now has a choice. Do I try to help my teammate out by tying up Wilson's arms, or do I stand there and say, ah, the refs will sort this out, this will be fine? I think anyone who's a hockey fan knows the answer to that. It's, I'm supposed to help my guy out here. I'm not here to fight Tom Wilson. What I am here to do is hopefully stop him from pounding my teammate in the face. So he tries to do that, and people are like, ah, you engaged. He didn't engage Tom Wilson. He's trying to stop a fight.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, you definitely have this correct in that situation. I 100% agree with you. Like, if you look at the way that he is pounding on Ryan Strome, of course you're going to jump in and stop it. The refs weren't there quick enough to do it, so Artemi Panarin did. And he, I mean, jump on his back is a bit of a is a bit of a exaggeration because it kind of looks like he's just trying to tie him up, but he's so small that his feet kind of leave the ground, and maybe it looks like he jumped on his back. I don't know.
Looks like a backpack. Like I said. It's well over 24 hours later, and the reaction's still coming strong. Tim McAuliffe knows this. It was a massive talking point on Tim and Friends yesterday, and he joins us here today. How are you, sir?
Outrage. 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 Sorry, I was getting in the mood. Everything good?
Oh, everything's great. And this has been a massive talking point for now 2 days.
Yes, it is.
And
yes.
There are very few who want to settle somewhere in the middle. It's either Tom Wilson never plays hockey again or anything goes when a scrum starts, Tim. Don't you know that?
Yeah, I don't. Is that like 2021? Is that another thing we chalk up to? Like there's no nuance. Like there is only extreme outrage or settle down, snowflake. Like there's no in between on anything anymore. And I was like the suspend him for one game, then you avoid whatever's going to happen tonight, crew, suspend him for two. I don't mind if you suspend him for the rest of the regular season. Just throw a little suspension at him because you can't lose your mind like that. And that was about, like, my grand take is it's all well and good to play tough hockey, and I actually enjoy tough hockey. When you lose your mind, you should be penalized more than coming back and icing it with an empty netter.
Yes, absolutely. Because if you don't go that route, then anything that happens on the ice that you consider egregious gets met with a reaction of a 10 on the over-the-top scale.
Without a doubt. And that's the other thing that I find ridiculous in all this is we slow things down and we watch them on Twitter and we watch them on Instagram and we only see like certain snippets of things. And then there's this great outrage. I ask you, and I don't know if either of you have played the game. I don't know if it's necessarily that you need to play the game to understand it, but was what Shane Gostisbehere did after an empty net goal just as dangerous as what Tom Wilson did to either one of the two that you could call egregious, punching the back of the head and or ragdolling someone?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
So where's the outrage today on him?
Well, like, he's getting a hearing.
Yeah, but I just mean the outrage from people, from the masses. Like, where's the statement from the Pittsburgh Penguins talking about What was the quote that they used?
Act of violence, I think, or something.
Horrifying act of violence. Where's the statement on the horrifying act of violence? Like, there's this disconnect that we all have to, like, say things further and further down a road and push the envelope further and further. And while I get that he should have been suspended, I think, like, the outrage sometimes is just predicated on how many people jump into a conversation these days.
Well, part of it is the reputation preceding it. Shane Gostisbehere doesn't have that reputation, just like Scott Niedermayer didn't have that reputation when he snapped with his stick back in the day. I think there's an allowance from most sports fans that it can be something that happens in the heat of the moment, but it isn't your nature. With Tom Wilson, it's repeated crossing the line. And the problem I think the league got into with, because I think what you said is, hey, if you suspend it for the rest of the regular season, you give them a nominal amount of games here. That's rational in most cases, but the problem is, in the last 2 months, he got suspended for 7 games. So it was either going to be, we suspend this guy for the balance of the regular season and the first round of the playoffs because of his rap sheet, or we don't do anything, and they chose nothing.
Right, and what they didn't choose was common sense. And that's my biggest beef with it. And yes, Tom Wilson has a rap sheet. How many people that you heard screaming bloody murder on Twitter knew about Tom Wilson's rap sheet? Like 60%? Like, there was a loud, proud contingency that had no idea what they were talking about. And maybe that's just me allowing myself to be governed by the dumb or governed by the ignorant. But I was shocked at how many people were weighing in on this with little to no actual knowledge other than, and maybe that's the beauty of sports, and that's why we can have these conversations and why we get paid to do this job and all that stuff, was that sometimes the ignorant can weigh in, and that's fine and dandy. But it seemed like there was no in between. And maybe me chalking that up to people having no idea what they were talking about was a little too far gone.
Well, I think that's kind of a little bit Twitter as well.
How
people can react
from
to
anything. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Your thoughts on the Rangers statement, though? I know some of the words that they chose could have been questionable. Was it too harsh, just what the doctor ordered? Or is it maybe showing the league tonight, like, look, you didn't do enough. Expect something to happen tonight.
Yeah, I have no idea what the Rangers were thinking with that statement, and I may walk down this road a little later today on the show. And the wording that they chose, to me, was really, really interesting, given what we may or may not see tonight. And I have a feeling that because the Rangers might not be equipped to deal with this physically, that they may turn the other cheek, and that would lessen my reaction to the words that they chose to use. But I don't know. I grew up watching Ty Domi fight Bob Probert on that very ice that they're going to play on, or that they're playing on in that game. There's a bit of a disconnect to me for the words they chose and the history of the game. And if everyone's ready to move on from the history of the game, then move on. But it certainly appears as though the Department of Player Safety isn't ready to move on from the history of the game. And I don't know why we're in this era where everything has got to be these gross, very harsh statements. I was going to say gross overstatement. The statement's not gross, but it seemed to me like it was an overstatement considering what I've seen happen on that ice specifically, never mind all ice across the National Hockey League.
Okay, so Tom Wilson now, like, obviously didn't get suspended for this. We know how he plays. He's a good hockey player. He does his role well, and he can push that line. It's just sometimes he crosses that line. And,
correct,
you know, some people believe he did that, you know, in the last game, and some people don't. But he's been talked to by the league before. Like, George Parros has had a sit-down with him, you know, a couple of times in person, explaining this is what you can do and this is what you can't do. So is there anything that the Capitals need to do with Tom Wilson? Does he need to change? Or is it just he's fine at what he does, and if he gets a suspension, he gets a suspension?
Well, last time he got a pretty big suspension, if I'm not mistaken. I know the seven gamer, but like he got a pretty big extension after one of his significant suspensions. He's a unicorn. Though, like if you polled every GM anonymously, what 90 to 100% would say that they want him on their team. Like there's this, and I don't know, maybe it's just a healthy balance of reality versus what you're aiming for. And in reality, sometimes, you know, there are steps to get to where you want to be, and the NHL just isn't there yet. But, and maybe that's what they want. But they play this game where they want their game to be physical. They want their game to be exciting. And part of that has to do with the physicality. And then they don't expect grown-ass men competing for millions of dollars and our adoration to step over the line every once in a while. And that's where I get puzzled by the outrage. Like, I've lost my mind playing beer league hockey. Like, I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying, like, if I'm going to trash talk Tom Wilson in that game, I probably say, hey, in 24 hours, you're really going to regret this. Like, that's my trash talk in this. But I don't get, like, where do we want to be? Like, if this is outrageous, then where do we want to be as a hockey, as a game? And how are we getting there? I think are better conversations than who's at fault and where the suspension should land. And like, I think the conversation's got to evolve into, okay, where do we actually want to be and how do we get there? Because the NHL certainly hasn't been clear in any way, shape, or form on that.
Yeah, it is a better talking point, and it's one that we encourage on this program and did yesterday as well. Tim McAuliffe joins us every single Wednesday. He's here with Rintoul and Sermon. One of our texters, I can tell he's listened to the show for quite some time because now he's doing the segues for me. The texter sends in, nobody's happier for the Tom Wilson story than Aaron Rodgers. Go Pack, says Dirk in Calgary. Like, he knew I wanted to get into Aaron Rodgers with you as well. In your mind, you've had time to digest it. Is there any way he plays for the Green Bay Packers again? Will time heal this wound?
I think he's a bit of a different dude, and I don't know if that's the right answer here. Like, I think that he's pissed off. He wanted people to know that he was pissed off, and he didn't get the response that he wanted, and so now we're at this point. I think that the Green Bay Packers may not have realized all of this. And I think there's ignorance on both sides. And what I would say is sit down, figure it out. You're getting paid $30 million. If you want more help, you can give $10 million back and go get more help. You cannot fix this, then sit down with the team and say, I'm not, like, this isn't going to happen. Trade me, pull a Denny Lemieux. Call an owner up on the phone and trade me right bleeping now. But it just seems to me like, how is it possible the reigning MVP and his team are at an impasse like this where he may retire? Like, it just doesn't seem plausible to me, and they've got to figure this out. And it's on both sides, because it would be utterly ridiculous after going to an NFC championship, being the MVP of the league, and just walking away because your team hasn't supported you enough. Like, go get the support or demand the trade. Like, let's get this thing going here.
There's a lot of next level stuff going on, because Rodgers was obviously so mad about what they did in last year's draft that he waited an entire year, Tim. He waited an entire year to detonate this on draft day. Like, you guys did that to me? Oh, yeah. Absolutely, I do. I think he's very calculated in this. I think he was mad about last year. I think they waited with the camp to leak it to Adam Schefter on draft day for a specific reason.
Yeah, so the only thing that I thought of was, is there a possibility that the Packers wanted to float that out there to see what the fan reaction would be to Aaron Rodgers? Because let's be clear here, Aaron Rodgers is also coming across as a petulant child trying to steal headlines on his second straight draft, right?
We can look at it that way for sure. Yep. And that's why I say, like, there's a lot of calculation involved.
Yeah.
Calculation involved here.
I'm not completely convinced that it was Rodgers' camp that floated this out there. I wonder if the Packers did it on purpose because they thought that it may come across as petulant child E, and also get the because they can now take the temperature of their fan base. Like, if you're a Green Bay Packer fan, whose side are you on? Do we know? Like, I would suggest to you that it's like 60-40.
Yeah, it might not be that close. I have no idea in the Packers fan base. I mean, we kind of saw a different situation play out with Brett Favre because he wanted to come back, but they finally had decided to move on. And eventually when he went and played for Minnesota, they couldn't stand him. But that was a pretty equal divide. I will say this. If Carson Palmer, who has a different place in NFL history than Aaron Rodgers, can dig his heels in and say, I'm retiring, trade me, and force the Bengals to do it, I think Aaron Rodgers can do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I see different franchises. I see one that has a little bit of history, a recent Super Bowl, and an NFC Championship, and then I see the Bengals. but I do get what you're saying, and I do understand. I listen, if Aaron Rodgers feels like at $30 million a year he has been blindsided by his organization, and you can pull the leverage and get a trade done, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. But I don't think that I know that they have spent 10 straight draft choices in the first round on 9 defensive players and the guy that's going to replace them. I understand that all. I also think that he's complicit in this in some way, shape, or form in how we got here. And especially when you take the job, when you get the job the way you got the job in Green Bay, you kind of have to understand where the franchise is going. And if you want the help, like I said, you can give some of that money back. The GOAT did it. Tom Brady did it. So it's not like it's unprecedented for a quarterback to want more help and make the team better by giving some money back. So here's what I'll say about it. The Packers are at fault, in my mind, 60%, and Rodgers is at fault 40% for not figuring this out with the franchise.
Tim, I want to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. They're moving north, not to Toronto, but they're getting a little bit closer in geography. Yeah, they're going to Buffalo in June. They made that announcement today. The ballpark has been completely renoed from what they had last year, no longer having batting cages in the concourse, but we'll have them in an actual proper place. But is this? Do you see there is any significance in this in terms of hopes of coming back to Toronto this year?
Not really.
No.
I think it's just, I think they knew they were going to do this. It was a matter of when and where. And my hope was, as I watched Europe go through, and I feel like Europe, listen, I'm no scientist, but I'm no doctor. I'm not even that smart. But I do read a little bit and watch a little bit from other parts of the world who are going through these waves before we are. And the part of me that, is a little puzzled is, like, I'm still seeing Champs League across Europe. I'm still seeing Europa League across Europe, and all those soccer players are crossing borders and going into different countries. And maybe there's different priorities in some of those countries, and maybe the money's a little bit different. I just wonder when we get to the point where this team may return to Canada and the hockey teams may cross the border, fully vaccinated. I don't know if that's where we got to get, or if we need more of our population fully vaccinated, but there just seems like there's no end in sight. And I think that we've learned from the Toronto Raptors season. I think we're learning from a lot of different places that this is really hard on the athletes. And there's no way that this won't cost the Jays a couple of wins along the way. And I'm not saying that takes precedent over public health in any way, shape, or form. What I am saying is the team is going to suffer because they don't have a permanent home.
and because they got to keep moving and because there's still question marks about Toronto. If I were a betting man, I would suggest to you that they probably don't return. But there's a little part of me this year, but there's a little part of me that's kind of holding out. If this team makes a run and maybe there's a playoff and that playoff takes place in October, and we're at a place where the numbers go down, based on vaccination and a little bit more of a herd immunity, if we're not in a spot where, at least the teams could cross the border, quarantine, and the Jays are playing home games in Toronto to a limited audience.
So, Tim, I have a friend who actually went down to the U18s. He's a scout for the Western, Saskatoon Blades. And he went down there, and he actually took in a game at the new Texas Rangers Stadium. And I saw the picture from the stadium, and I thought to myself, one, I'm still a little uncomfortable seeing that many people together in one place just because of what we're going through up here in Canada. But I thought to myself, I'm like, what I wouldn't give just to kind of go back to reality, or not to reality, go back to prior to our new reality and be like, just sit on a summer afternoon, having a beer, watching a ball game.
Oh, it's funny. I got a good friend, my best man at my wedding. He's a hockey guy, and he just kept sending me videos from friends of his at the U18s going out for dinner, going out for a drink after, exact same situation. And he was just like, do you remember this? And I think we're all in that spot. And I think, there would be a lift. I know watching those games from the States where fans are in the stands, even if it's unsafe, for some, there's like this feeling like we're missing out right now here in Canada. And I'm not suggesting again, public safety, public health. I'm just saying in my mind, it would feel real good to see a few fans in the stands. And it would be amazing if it was done safely by the end of this year.
It'd be great, although I think it's going to be like a grade 8 dance. We're not going to know how to interact anymore. We're all going to stand on one side of the room and go, oh, there's people here. Oh, all right.
Wallflowers, yeah.
Maybe next year. But
I'll tell you what, that is the way I like to attend sporting events, is with nobody around me, having empty space around. Like, if you gave me my druthers, this socially distanced crowd, sign me up. I'm in. I hate having people around you. Put your feet up on the seats in front of you. Put your beer on the other seat. I'd be down if we could do socially distanced for the rest of time. But every once in a while, you need that 40,000 in there for a Jose Bautista bat flip or something like that.
He's Tim McAuliffe, and as I learned in the last 15 minutes, not a scientist nor a doctor. I will refrain from introducing you as either in the future, okay?
Or even smart, Scotty, or even smart.
Well, let's not go that far. Thanks, Timmy.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks, be well, Karen. Be well, Scotty.
You as well. That is Tim McAuliffe joining us here. We got to turn this over in a hurry, and we will get there. Lots of comments coming in. Karen wants to train for what? We'll get into that throughout the course of the show. And JT Miller, he didn't have a real good night. Did the Vancouver Canucks react the right way? It's not about them. It's about tactics. We'll get into it next, right here on Rintoul and Sermon. It's Rintoul and Sermon. I don't want to get into it right now, but I will tease this for later in the program. You've decided something you could train for. I'm not sure you've thought it through, but we will get to that later in the program.
Okay.
I'm not sure you've thought it through, but we will get to it a little bit later on in the program. JT Miller has not had a good season. He's had some good moments, and his best one is probably off the ice this year with when he took a stand for his teammates and ended up getting the NHL schedule pushed back. But he's not had a good season overall. He's had some good moments, scored overtime winners. He's not completely taken over games in the same manner he did last season. But overall, he's not had a very good year. I don't know all of the reasons for it. I can speculate, but he hasn't had a great, good year. And last night, if it wasn't his worst game, it was pretty close to his worst game with the turnovers he had. All four goals that the Edmonton Oilers scored last night, JT Miller had a hand in, whether it was a turnover, which he committed on a couple, or a bad penalty he took, which led to two more. A game in which the Vancouver Canucks actually played pretty decently in terms of containing the nuclear guys for 35 minutes, and then it went sideways in a hurry. But JT Miller had one of those nights. He turned the puck over, goal. Turn the puck over, goal. Take a penalty, two goals. He was bad, and no one's going to make a case otherwise. His head coach was asked about him after the game. Here's what he had to say.
Would I like to see those turnovers not happen that he made tonight? For sure. I also know I got a player in the room that's not very happy about himself either. And he's down and he's ultra competitive. The smart hockey player, he knows when he makes mistakes. He's also a big engine on our team. I could bench him, I guess, but I also want to win the game too. And our team wants to win. And I'm the one that makes that call whether to bench him or not. And I didn't. And I will talk to him tomorrow. I will talk to him before the next game. We will help him along like we do with all our players. But I don't worry about JT Miller. He's done a lot of good things for our team since he's got here. He made some mistakes tonight. He has made some mistakes before, and he'll make more mistakes. But this guy wants to win. Make no bones about it. He plays hard, and I'll go to bat for him.
So that's Travis Green defending not benching JT Miller, not taking more proactive measures from a coaching role within this game. But this isn't a JT Miller-specific conversation. This is about coaching tactics. This is about knowing your players. You know who else has not had a good year, Karen? Matthew Tkachuk. He's had a couple of moments, but anybody who's watched the Flames this year knows that Matthew Tkachuk has not had a very good year. They're not the same player, but they've got some similar traits as far as DNA goes. And to me, it begins with the fire. The fire that both players play with, the fire that drives both of them, and sometimes that leads to poor consequences. But more often than not, if it's focused and harnessed in the right way, it leads to a really good player that you want on your team and is going to help drive your team.
You know what I think JT Miller and Matthew Tkachuk have probably most in common, Scott, is they're probably hardest on themselves. And they just want to win. They just want to help the team. And they're probably going to do anything in their power to do that. And in seasons where it's been a frustrating season on both sides, for Vancouver and for Calgary, and sometimes that trying too hard just doesn't work out and it turns into goals in the back of your net or turnovers or penalties. You just can't figure it out. And I see that from both of those players. What I like about both of those players is I don't think, you know, putting them on the bench, sending a message that way is really the tactic with either of them, because they understand they need to be better. They understand they're two of the better players on their team at the moment. And they understand that, yeah, okay, I made some mistakes, but I can be better and I will be better. And I don't think, like, I think absolutely everything that Travis Green did last night with JT Miller was perfect. And I think you treated a player like Matthew Tkachuk exactly the same way, because they know.
Each of them's had a different problem this year, but it stems from the same thing, and it's that fire. Tkachuk's issue this year that people pointed to was, well, that fire seems to have been extinguished. Where's the emotion that this guy plays with? And the Jake Muzzin puck flip and what happened afterwards and the way Tkachuk played afterwards, that questioned whether or not Matthew Tkachuk was going to be able to play with that same fire, whether it was wanted, whether he was sulking is the wrong word, but taking things to the nth degree of, okay, all right, you don't want me to do that? I won't do it. I won't do any of it. All right. And he wasn't effective playing that way. Here's the commonality. Travis Green last night knows that he can't afford to put that fire out. Mm-hmm. In Calgary, it was, how do we reignite that fire? Because both guys are extremely effective. And Tom Wilson, he's a completely different player. And the only reason I bring his name up is that you hear a lot of people in the last 24 to 48 hours say, everybody would want him on their team. Everybody would want Matthew Tkachuk at his best on their team. Everybody would want JT Miller at his best on their team. But they've had some pretty wild swings this year, and we can compare him to other situations. You know, Mark Scheifele is a hell of a player, and he got benched for a portion of a game. And Matthew Tkachuk has seen his ice time diminished in certain periods this year. You saw it with JT Miller. Like, people are forgetting that JT Miller, when he had poor games earlier this year, it wasn't him exclusively that got sat down, but his line was told to sit for a little bit when they were making some egregious turnovers. The problem is you can't play that card too often with important players on your team because you can't afford to lose them completely.
Yeah, and Travis Green looks at it in a certain way from last night too, Scott. I mean, there's the aspect of he needs JT Miller in his lineup being JT Miller because honestly, right now he doesn't have another player to fill into his role on the ice. When I look at coaches, like, let's go to this Winnipeg situation with Paul Maurice and Mark Scheifele, because, Scott, your coach, he's a veteran coach who's been with that team for a long time. So he knows how to push the buttons. And what he thought what was happening at that time was he had to send a message, I think, to everybody. Not just a message to Mark Scheifele, who he said was something about core values and benched him during the game. But you know what? A player's on the ice, Scott, they look at this and they say, okay, wait. If this star player is not playing up to snuff, and he's our star player, like we need him out here to win hockey games, and our head coach is willing to set him down to show an example, maybe I need to step up my game as well. And I think that's what Paul Maurice was reading the room. He was reading that his team needed some sort of scapegoat, shall we say, and that's how he used Mark Scheifele. And I mean, you could argue that the team has gone out of tailspin for different reasons and it didn't reignite them, but the team still is in the back of their head, like, if this is going to happen to our star player, it can happen to me. So I need to be playing at my best. I look at Washington's situation, and not Tom Wilson, but they healthy scratched, what, three players because of being late for certain events that were team mandated. And you could look at it as Peter Laviolette, new coach, new system, situation being like, I want to tell these players how it's going to be. You have to be at these events. You're professional. If you don't, you don't make it. So it could be a young coach, or sorry, a new coach, because Peter Laviolette's not young, but a new coach trying to get respect from his players, understanding that I'm setting a precedent. And this is where you need to get through. I look at Travis Green last night, reading the room, reading his player, and knowing the fact that benching him isn't going to do any good other than maybe go the wrong way for JT Miller. So he read the player because he knows what motivates him.
Text comes in, and I saw this last night. Some people contacted me on Twitter saying this, hey, JT Miller, time to trade him. Someone just texted in, there's a reason he's been traded a couple times. I think we're starting to see it. This is where Sutter and Green have a commonality. When that conversation has arisen at any time, when either of these players has come under a large degree of fire this year, both coaches, in fact, Paul Maurice did this with Blake Wheeler earlier this year as well. Yep. They said, hold on a second here, guys. Just pump the brakes a little bit. And we have another text coming in saying, the Canucks need more JT Millers, not less. And I think there's a lot of Flames fans that would say the exact same thing about Matthew Tkachuk. Okay, hasn't been a great year, but they need more guys like that than fewer. And the coaches have kind of said the same thing. They've sent their messages in different ways through the media. You heard what Travis Green had to say today. We don't have a Daryl Sutter clip at the ready, but he's defended Matthew Tkachuk because he knows that's the type of engine player he's going to need on his team. He's going to need more than that. And the Canucks are going to need more than that. We can talk about all the deficiencies in either lineup if we want to. But they know that's the better path to winning. It's not as though there aren't other players you could acquire, but trying to get those players is really tough. It's why anytime a name like that comes up, you hear people say, oh, I'd take that guy. Yeah, if you're willing to move him, I'll make a phone call. Let's go down that road.
Yeah, and when you look at Matthew Tkachuk, like, doesn't he look like the prototypical what a Daryl Sutter player should be, Scott? Doesn't he? Like, when you look at what Daryl Sutter, how he wants to play hockey and that hard forechecking and being hard on the puck, like, Matthew Tkachuk strikes me as a player that Daryl Sutter wants in his system. And it's funny because he's done it differently with different players, right? Like, he's defended Tkachuk, again, having a tough year, down year, but a guy who he sees probably can fit in his system. But then when it comes to a Johnny Gaudreau and he's playing his 500th game, he goes about it a little differently, calling him out in the media saying like, well, I hope it's better than his 499th game. You know, again, another player who he's probably trying to decide if he can have in the way that he wants to play down the road. So it's interesting how different coaches take different tactics with different players, and that's what we're talking about. But the understanding is that they know these guys best. They know how to get the most out of their players, and they understand what is harmful for the team and for these players. And I think that's what you saw last night.
It does feel like it's more magnified this year. I feel like we've seen more notable healthy scratches, more situations like this. How much of it is related to all of the surrounding factors of the pandemic and being in your hotel room, and when things aren't going well, you can't do some of those things with your teammates or blow off steam in the ways you could before. I mean, everybody can speculate, but again, it comes down to an individual.
And you're seeing some things too, and I saw this, I heard this pointed out on the 650 morning show today with Halford and Brough, and it's something that I hadn't considered, but they put a spotlight on it. Like, when you see a goal scorer in a normal year, Scott, and you have the goal scorer, what does the camera do from the television at home? It pans to the goal scorer, then probably goes to the crowd, then probably goes to a coach, you know, goal for the goal or against the goal team, whatever, and goes back to the crowd. Right? And you have the noise. So you don't generally hear or see the offender as much in, say, you know, a JT Miller turning the puck over last night to Connor McDavid. It ends up in the back of the net. So this is a situation where you're hearing a lot more frustration, and it could be magnified a lot more just because of the aspect we don't have fans in the stands, and cameras are now trying to find ways and different shots to go to. Okay, so what do? You go to the offender, or you hear the F-bomb dropped in the arena. It wasn't something I thought about, but maybe in terms of no fans in stands, this is what is being magnified a lot more.
Yeah, you can certainly hear it a little more. That's what JT Miller was saying. We can't repeat it, but here's what they're saying.
Oh.
That was the quickest intro. Yeah, exactly.
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
I didn't know if I was supposed to freestyle there. Is that what's happening?
Well, you ain't hearing me singing.
We said yesterday maybe it's the best story in the NHL, and we hadn't touched on it until the final hour of the program because of all of the reaction we had to the biggest story in the NHL this week, which is Tom Wilson. But that is Michael Hauser, who won again last night. Back-to-back wins over the New York Islanders. He's stopping 40-plus shots. He's winning his first two games in the NHL. He's a fantastic story. We got more details in 31 Thoughts yesterday. This is a young man who was born with two club feet, had 11 surgeries by Elliott's account by the time he was 2 years old, wasn't supposed to be someone who excelled in team sports or in sports for that matter. It was just about having some kind of normal life, but he surpassed every hurdle put in front of him. Again, he wins again last night. Took him almost 300 minor league games before he gets to the National Hockey League. Here's what he had to say this morning on radio in Buffalo about what kept him going all those years when he wasn't even getting to the AHL level for the most part.
I've always viewed it just as hockey still. Like, I've always, every September, I always get ready for a new season. And, you know, I've never really been out of a contract. An NHL contract I have, but after my entry level, I've always been on an American League deal afterwards. I always just thought that, you know, even if I'm fifth on the depth chart, that, you know, something happens, I'll be up there. Something else happens, it's my net in the American League then. So that's always kind of been my mindset is, you know, be patient and make sure you do, you know, play as well as you can, because I've always thought that I was one of the better goalies in the East Coast League. So I wanted to, you know, make sure that I played as well as I could there and just keep going.
Scott, it takes a lot of perseverance to go where he started and where he is now. It takes a love for the game. It takes an internal drive, Scott, that a lot of us probably don't have to continue doing what you want to do with the hopes of getting to the NHL. I think this is a wonderful story. I think that it just shows that if you do have that drive that, again, most of us or a lot of us don't have, you can get to your dream. And I give him all the kudos in the world that he was able to hang in there, hung in the ECHL, got to the A a bit, and then was finally called up to live his dream. It's a human story at this point. It's not just a story about hockey.
We referenced his time in junior. He's with a very successful franchise. And the part I didn't know about that was that when they brought him to the London Knights, he wasn't supposed to be the guy. He was supposed to be the backup, and they had another highly touted prospect. And turned out he just won the job in training camp and never gave it up. It's a really good story. Good for Buffalo. They've had an awful year. They've had a couple of goaltenders come up, and for different reasons, they've been very good stories. Bob Hartley won himself another championship, the Gagarin Cup over in Russia in the KHL. He was on the 31 Thoughts podcast, which was released this morning. On his roster this year, Ilya Kovalchuk, who was in the NHL last season, went back to Russia to play this year, and Hartley was asked by Merrick and Friedman whether or not Kovalchuk wants to play in the NHL again.
No doubt. He wants to play in the NHL. He wants to win the Stanley Cup. No, that's easy. He told me, there's no secrets between me and Kovey. And, you know, I called him. I said, come and play. I said, you're not going to sign right now in the NHL. I said, show the NHL you can still play. Come and play with us. And he did an unbelievable job. I can tell you what he did on the ice. Everybody could see this. What I can tell you also, and nobody could see this, is what he did in the room. Mm-hmm. We had some very young great players. Yegor Chinnikov, first-round pick of Columbus this year. Klim Kostin, a first-round pick of St. Louis that had a hard time you know, with his first years in North America, came back with us. He's a power forward. He's a force out there. Covey was a huge help for me, you know, like dealing with those young kids, dealing with the pressure. So, like, his dream is to win a Stanley Cup.
And that's what why he didn't stay this last year, Scott, because he said he was willing to go to sign with a contender, and there was no contenders out there that were willing to take his contract, so he went back to Russia. I mean, I kind of put this in the, yeah, he can help a team out in the short term, but in the long-term grind of an 82-game schedule, including playoffs, do you think Ilya Kovalchuk still has the ability at the age of 38 years old to go through the rigors of a full-on NHL season? Maybe, yeah, probably, and maybe a third-line role or whatever the case may be, but it's almost so like, if you're a contender and you look at contenders around the league, are they willing to bring him in? I don't know.
Toronto is willing to bring in Joe Thornton and Wayne Simmons on sweetheart deals because they're contending. Pardon me?
But have been continuously playing in the NHL. And, you know, I wonder if an Ilya Kovalchuk will be able to. We've seen him come and go. We've seen him mentally come and go. We've seen him waver a lot of the times. Yeah, he wants to win a Stanley Cup, obviously. But, I mean, is a Tampa Bay Lightning going to bring him in? Is a, you know, Vegas Golden Knights going to bring him in? I highly doubt it.
Well, this year they weren't. But last year, he got traded to the Washington Capitals. He left L.A. He went to Montreal, and he was really good.
Yep.
He was really good. In fact, there are a lot of people in Montreal that thought he was going to re-sign there because of how much success he had. Mark Bergevin made some other pretty big-name moves in the offseason and ended up getting a guy like Corey Perry to come to that organization instead of a guy like Ilya Kovalchuk. Washington was really excited to get him last year. I can absolutely see him being on a roster and having the understanding of, okay, for 82, you're probably not going to get all of them. Maybe you're going to get 56 of those 82 games. I don't know. But we need you come playoff time, and on this contract for a guy who's made a lot of money and just wants to win, I can see a bunch of teams inquiring about that. Last but certainly not least, I promised this clip, Karen, we'll get it. It's Brett Favre, who unceremoniously made his way out of Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers might be doing the same. Here's Brett Favre on whether or not he thinks Aaron Rodgers plays for the Packers again.
Fairly well, and honestly, I just don't see him coming back and just saying, all right, let's bury the hatchet, whatever that, for whatever caused the rift. I'm just going to come back and play because I love the guys. I love the Green Bay fans. I assume that he does, but his rift isn't with the fans nor the players. It's with the front office, you know. So will he just swallow his pride and come in? Maybe, but I don't see that happening. I if there's not a trade, my gut tells me that he'd rather sit out than play.
I mean, I agree with Brett in that. I don't agree with a lot of what he says, but I agree with that, Scott. I don't think I'm going to see Aaron Rodgers in a Green Bay Packers jersey ever again. Did you see what came out today about the leaked group chat? And it was obviously leaked from teammates, and it's referred to the fact that Rodgers referred to their general manager in Green Bay as Jerry Krause. And we all know, like, how Jerry Krause was viewed by Michael Jordan and other teammates in The Last Dance, if you watch The Last Dance. He was basically the punching bag, verbally and sometimes physically, not in a harmful way, but jokingly. But he was always the brunt of the joke. And if that's the way that Aaron Rodgers sees the general manager, and now teammates are putting this out there in the public to make Aaron even look worse, like, not only is he going to have to mend fences with the general manager, but he's going to have to mend fences with his teammates at this point, too.
Well, maybe it's just his teammates letting people know this is how bad it is. Like, this is how bad it is. I don't think that he's going to have to mend fences with his teammates here as much. There'll be some on that roster that are very disappointed with his actions because they want him back, and those guys want to win, and They're going to be Green Bay Packers next year, and they know their chances are severely diminished if Aaron Rodgers isn't the guy who's pulling the trigger for that offense. There'll be others that say, yeah, I get it. I get it. Like, I don't believe in management here either.
Does he not strike you as the guy, Scott, that, like, he probably sits alone in his locker and like, I don't know, I have this vision right now of the locker room of Aaron Rodgers just sitting there with his playbook or brooding or whatever and, like, not talking to anybody. I just have this vision of him not being exactly a buddy-buddy guy in the locker room or the most liked guy in the locker room. And sometimes that doesn't matter because he's so good that he's winning you football games. He just doesn't strike me as one of the guys.
I don't see him that way. I see him as I have a very tight circle, and there's probably a circle in that locker room who are, they're Aaron's guys. And he's down with those guys, but he's at a point in his career where he's not going to go out of his way to be class president. Like, he doesn't need everybody's vote. He's Aaron Rodgers. If you remember how he came into the job, like, one of the great stories back in the day when he was taken over from Brett Favre is how Aaron Rodgers, that offseason when Green Bay said, look, we're moving on from Brett Favre, this is your team now. Like, he was the guy who stayed in Green Bay that offseason, had all the offensive linemen over all the time, wanted to get to know them better, wanted to have dinners at his house. So maybe there's been a personality change as his star has risen, but that was the origin of who he was. So I think there are still tight Aaron Rodgers guys, but I also think there's a bunch of dudes on the outside.
Yeah, I would see a lot of dudes on the outside that look at him as kind of this, like, we can't even get close to talking to him. If I had a question, I couldn't even go to him. And, you know, this text just came into the inbox. His brother Jordan didn't help Aaron's public perception either. And I've always said this, like, if we know that Rodgers has a rift with his family, we don't know the situation why, but there is a rift. And it doesn't seem like he's the type of person to, for whatever reason, want to repair said rift. And if there's a rift now with the Packers, like, I hope... So one with your family, I think there's going to be one with the organization. I don't think he's willing to repair that one.
Who would have thought that two consecutive off seasons, you could see Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers show up for different franchises than the ones that we've always associated with them. And we'll probably, for most of our time that we discuss them.
Quick question. I know we're getting to break, but what odds do you put on seeing Aaron Rodgers in an NFL jersey next year? I'm thinking it's under 50% at this point.
100%.
You do? Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to go under 50. I'm going to go under 50.
I think he plays for somebody. I'm not saying he plays all 17 games, but I think he plays for somebody next year. I'm Scott Rintoul. She's Karen Sermon. Justin Bourne joins us next. Keep those texts coming in. We've had plenty of them. 960, 960, 650, 650. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Regular listener Ian texts in, note to self, never put thoughts about management into emails or texts. Yeah, it's probably good advice to follow, Ian. That's probably very good advice.
Uh-oh, Ian, what happened?
Well, nothing yet, but he's hearing the story about Aaron Rodgers, you talking about Rodgers in the group chat, some of those chats getting leaked. You think you're in the inner circle and nobody would violate that trust, but then somehow it gets out there. Have you ever had that? I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've had that happen to you where you've either sent a text or a direct message and you thought you were sending it to somebody and it ended up being to somebody else. You happen to have a two or three texts come in the span of a couple of minutes. You're in one conversation, but a text comes up. You think you've responded to one text, but you've actually responded to another. And there's that moment of panic of, what did I do? What did I say? Can this go sideways?
Yeah. Can I tell you a quick story? So back when I was serving at Boston Pizza, and this is going to go back to when I lived in Winnipeg. So this is like in the early 2000s, I guess you could say, mid-2000s. And this is where we still had like Razor phones and stuff like this. Like, there was no real security in terms of your face recognition or thumbprint or whatever the case may be to open your phone. So I'm at work. I'm not feeling well. And I asked the girl there working with me to cover, like, to stay later than me. And she was kind of complaining about it. So I text one of my friends, Scott, saying, like, she's complaining. Like, why can't she just help me out? Blah, blah, blah. I ended up texting the girl that was serving with me. But so I ran to the back because we weren't supposed to have our phones on us. And I did. I ran to the back and I literally found her phone and I deleted the text from her phone. Because I was like, oh my gosh, she can't see this because I totally sent it to the wrong person. And that's probably a bad thing to do, but I had to cover my ass somehow. And so that is what I did. I literally deleted the text from her phone.
See, if you knew Seinfeld, like most people know Seinfeld, you'll remember the episode where this happens and a message gets left on an answering machine. They got to sneak into an apartment to get the answering machine. Like,
same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing happened. Back in the day when there were things called answering machines and they actually had cassettes in them. If you're younger, you will have no idea what we're talking about. Justin Bourne does, though, and he knows a whole lot more about hockey than we do, so that's why we bring him on. Co-host of Hockey Central. You see him on Sportsnet's television coverage, and on sportsnet.ca is where you can read him. Justin, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm well, and I share the Boston Pizza server thing. I also was a server at Boston Pizza, and I too have many times texted the wrong person. It's a terrifying thing.
It is. That moment where you're like, what did I just send to that person? Can it be taken the wrong way? How is this going to go? It's a terrible couple of minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, like I'm sure there's a lesson in just like don't say terrible things about other people, but I'm not going to do that. So,
okay, let's start with a good story then. I don't know if you want to say terrible things about the Tom Wilson incident or not. So we'll start with something better than that. We will start with Michael Hauser, who is probably the best story in the National Hockey League this week. As a guy who played a lot of minor league hockey, how much appreciation do you have for what this goaltender in Buffalo has done the last couple of nights?
Well, it's awesome. It's a great story. And, you know, they had some quotes from his family just saying, like, you know, no, now he'll be able to say he did it and no one will ever take it from him. And, you know, it's not, the quotes are not, well, now he has a chance to be an NHL goaltender and this is the opportunity he's always waiting for. It was like, this is a cool experience that happened. And I think that's a really healthy way to look at it. It's probably not realistic to forecast, you know, an NHL future, but boy, you put in the time, you do your work, you finally get your break, and to play as well as he played, I think a lot of us can really connect with that. I wish it didn't have to come at the expense of my beloved New York Islanders and my betting pocketbook, but I appreciate what he's done for the Sabres the last couple games.
And I know you would have loved to have laced him up for the Islanders at some point, or the Sabres, whoever gave you a chance, but I ask you because you can appreciate it, because you've played in the ECHL, and at some point you went, I've got a future somewhere else. What was the turning point for you in your own personal career where you said, I'm just not going to do this anymore?
As a slap shot to the face was pretty dividing in my career where I was like, you know, I played in the Islanders system, you know, played exhibition games with the Islanders and then had a good year with them. They offered me a contract to come back, but I just thought I had more opportunity in another organization. And during that season, I was getting older. I was 25, and on my 26th birthday, I got a slap shot in the face. And for me, it was like, all right, I got 3 months of rehab, not going to play again for this season. You know, I had to really assess what was to come in my life, and that's when I started blogging. I started jtborn.wordpress.com, and by the end of the season, I had a decent following, and I was like, huh, I may have a way to stay involved in the game without having to break my face anymore, and I just decided to go that route.
Justin, we were talking yesterday about teams that maybe we should watch a little bit more prior to the playoffs because we might not know a lot about them. For myself, it was the Carolina Hurricanes. And yeah, I understand that they're, you know, en route to possibly being the President's Trophy winner this season. And I was looking at that top line, and they have Toivo Teravainen back for the 5 games now. Of course, he missed the previous because of concussion. But that top lineup, him, Aho, and Svechnikov had 8 points last night. Is that one of the more underrated top lines in the NHL?
I think so, yeah. You can basically take, in terms of talking underrated, all you have to do is cross off everyone in the North Division and start looking around the league for other top-end lines. You know, the MacKinnon line probably gets their due because of MacKinnon. They are obviously top of the game, but, you know, you look at a group like Vegas with Mark Stone, you know, even Florida, you know, Barkov used to be all the talk for underrated, but boy, he's a guy who, you know, people talked about in Hart Trophy terms this season. Their line is so good. But yeah, Carolina's sneaky, sneaky depth there. Even on the back end, like people think that, oh, Carolina's this team, you know, high-flying, goal-scoring team. It's like they defend really well, too, with a great decor. So pretty much everything about the Hurricanes is underrated, and I don't know if that'll ever change just based on the market they're in.
When I look at the East Division right now, you've got Pittsburgh currently first, Washington, Boston, and the Islanders. Islanders kind of floundering a little bit down the stretch. But when you look at those 4 teams, do you see a clear favorite, or it's kind of just a crapshoot of just who's playing the best hockey at any point in time?
Yeah, well, I think it is the, you know, who's playing the best hockey thing. And you know, look at how Boston has been since adding Taylor Hall, all of a sudden they can score goals. What do you know? And, you know, Boston's the cheap knock on them was who's going to score goals if it's not the one line. So making them a 2-line team provides another dimension. And, you know, they've done pretty well since he's been over there. Pittsburgh, it's tough to know what to make of them because they just had this, like, baby soft schedule. Their last 9 games, it was like, of the schedule, was like 4 Buffalo, 4 New Jersey, a Rangers game. Like, they really had an easy walk into the finish line. So I think they're going to go in hot, but they haven't had to play too much competitive hockey. So not sure what to make of them, their first-round chances. You know, there seems like some internal drama in Washington. Kuznetsov is kind of on the outs, so, you know, with the coaching staff sometimes. And, you know, we know what's going on with Wilson. So Yeah, there's a few teams that look like they're struggling, and Boston seems to be rising. Obviously, New York going the other way, so I wouldn't be surprised if Boston, you know, who didn't look like much earlier in the season, makes some noise in the postseason.
Hockey Central's Justin Bourne joining us here on Rintoul and Sermon. Since you mentioned the Washington Capitals, let's go down Tom Wilson Highway here. This has progressed, at least I think it has, Justin, to less about suspended, not suspended. Like, people are pretty rooted in their opinions on that. But more about, okay, what level of physicality during the game, after the whistle, do we want? And what do we want to be willing to sell? What should this game look like? Where are you at in that discussion?
Well, I'm torn. You know, I, for one, I really appreciate that it's not an easy answer and what the NHL has to deal with. So I love the physical stuff. Like, I loved when the Battle of Alberta was popping off last year, and I love when there's goalie fights. I am not someone who is above fighting in hockey. I think it's thoroughly enjoyable. Do I think it's safe and good for the humans participating? Absolutely not. But I accept that there is a measure of that accepted when you become a hockey player, and I was someone who has accepted it as well. So I love it, but I do know that the game has to protect its players, and it has cleaned it up over the years, right? Like, we see far fewer blindside hits than we used to. We see far fewer fights than we used to. So the NHL has done a good job at moving it in the right direction. But I like the idea of keeping some of this element that keeps fans engaged and excited. And I think particularly in the U.S., the more casual fan really does enjoy that. And they've got us here in Canada, hook, line, sinker, no matter what they do. So it's important to keep those people interested. I don't think you can legislate that out of the game anyway, just based on the way hockey is inside the confines of a, you know, boarded up rink. So it's a tough line the NHL has to walk, showing that they care about the players and safety, but also allowing some of this stuff, allowing Tom Wilson to do what he did last game. You know, maybe that's a bridge too far. It certainly is for many, but I think they'll throw the book at Wilson the next time he does anything even close to illegal. This one, they don't like that it's highlighted the gray area where they try to kind of straddle the line.
I don't need an exact number or percentage here, but your gut reaction to what you saw from the New York Rangers yesterday, and how many teams around the NHL are not in support of, hey, get George Parros out of here, he doesn't know what he's doing, it's just this guy. But more of the way of thinking of, we need a longer look at what we're doing here.
I don't know. I don't think it's many teams who think that are upset with Parros. Like, I think the Department of Player Safety in general does a very good job, and I know I'm in the minority here on that, because people, you know, I'm on Twitter and I'm aware of what the public sentiment is. But, you know, they've got a pretty good understanding of what's across the line and what isn't. And I think they also have more of an appetite for what the, you know, for the physicality that the NHL wants included in the type of product that they want to sell to fans. So, you know, I think they're doing a good job. Maybe there's another handful of teams around the league that would like to see things done differently. And of course, that's not in reference to this exact incident. I bet a lot of teams would have liked to see Wilson get punished more severely for that. But I think in general, they think that the Department of Player Safety is doing good. So I would not be surprised if the Rangers come out of this whole thing big losers with, you know, the public statement about getting rid of Parros. I can't see the NHL taking that rolling over. I think a huge fine is coming their way.
Do you see anything carried over into tonight's game?
Something has to. Like, I just can't see the Rangers just skating around, you know, all hunky-dory, just another night. There's certainly something going to happen. And I don't know that they're not going to go fight Wilson. They don't really have anyone to go do that. So, you know, whether they're a little rougher, dirtier, and some of the other players or not, I think that may happen. The one thing that may cancel that is, I can't imagine that the league isn't going to say something to the team. Like, I'm sure there's going to be warnings issued to both teams. Bettman will be in the house. This is going to be a highly scrutinized game. Don't do anything dumb or we're going to throw the book at you. So they'll know that there's a higher level of scrutiny, but I can't see guys just letting it go with a wink and a smile. See you next time.
Last night in the Canucks Oilers game, JT Miller made a few mistakes that ended up in the back of his own net, or ended up in goals for Edmonton. He also showed a lot of visible frustration last night. We've seen a lot of visible frustration from him all season, basically from the start of the season. But Travis Green came to his defense, Justin, and he said to the fact that, like, I could bench him, but I'm not going to. I need his fire and I need him out there. We want to win games. Is there a fine line that the coaches have to walk sometimes in terms of making sure that they don't extinguish that fire and doing the wrong thing, like benching a player?
Yeah, like the worst thing that they could get from a player in the Canucks situation is what they're getting from a lot of their players, which is just apathy and just clearly trying to get through it, not caring. Like, you really need those guys who care, who feel like every game is important, that this is their careers. I imagine, man, I got to admit, if I was in that dressing room right now and I saw we had, you know, 10 games to go or 9 games to go, and all we're doing is playing just basically to make sure the sponsors get their money's worth, like, you know, I would not be able to muster my best effort. You can't tell me pregame nap matters or that you care about your pregame meal as much if you don't feel the game matters. You try when you're out there, but I just think JT Miller is someone who still cares, and I bet the coach and the staff appreciates having that. So he's the last guy they'd be looking to discipline if they can avoid it.
Miller, Tkachuk, Mark Scheifele, with those types of players, and I know Scheifele's a little different on the emotional barometer than the first two guys I mentioned, you got to be really careful about doing things like benching them. You can't play that card very often with that kind of player, can you?
No, absolutely not. This is a... These are your horses that make the team go. And when you talk about, you know, driving the play or driving the bus, and, you know, that's the type of player that you need, you want. And so that doesn't mean they're exempt from getting in trouble. And you have to show sometimes to the rest of the team that you are willing to do that. But no, that's not a guy you want to, those aren't guys you want to upset. You need them to be invested and bought into the team logo. And that comes with giving them a little bit more slack than you give the rest of your players.
Couple more minutes with Justin Bourne of Hockey Central and Sportsnet.ca with us here on Rintoul and Sermon. I've seen it happen more in the last couple of weeks as the quest for 100 continues for Connor McDavid. The number of people who want to apply, and I don't think it's a vast majority, I think it's the other way. They want to apply this Canadian division discount. Oh, well, he's only got this many points because he's playing against the Canadian division. Are you discounting anything he's done this season whatsoever?
No, get lost with that, right? Like, I don't want to hear that. That's just garbage. This is a guy playing against legitimate NHLers. Imagine diminishing to Calgary Flames and, you know, Giordano and Tkachuk and their group who's having a tough year, you know, because they're not a good enough opponent to count the points or something. Like, absolutely not. I don't buy that for a second. All you have to do is watch these hockey games to know that he's not just terrorizing Ottawa. He's terrorizing everyone. It's a nightly thing with this guy. When you see him coming down the ice as a defenseman, most guys just tuck tail and turn the other way because they know he's going to beat him wide. So, nope, this is as incredible as anything I've ever seen. And right now I'm tuning into a lot of hockey, a lot of Oilers hockey, because you don't want to be someone who misses what one of the greatest players is doing in the prime of his career.
Yeah, and the last time I checked, guys like Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews are pretty good, and those are the guys closest to him in the Canadian division other than someone on his team. And Marner's 29 points back of what McDavid's doing, and he's playing the same competition. He's a really good player. I have been bemused by the number of people this week that have decided to put up their hand and say that someone who plays in Toronto deserves more attention for what he's doing in Auston Matthews, because it seems to me, Justin, guys who play in Toronto get a decent amount of attention.
Oh, it's absolutely wild. Yeah, that is the theme every other week is like, you know, are we not talking enough about this guy who's talked about, you know, 40% of the time on all national sports talk radio? It is wild, but he's having a great year, and we talk about him all the time, and then you're right, he's 30 points or whatever behind Connor McDavid. That should give perspective on just how special what McDavid's doing really is.
And what have you seen from McDavid's game this year? I mean, we've seen him win the Hart. We've seen him win scoring titles before. You know, we know he's probably a little pissed off that he was second best on his team last year in terms of Leon Draisaitl winning the Hart Trophy, even though he's probably happy for him, but probably like, okay, I need to get that mantle back. Like, but what are you seeing this year from him that you maybe haven't seen in the past?
Honestly, it's the same Connor McDavid. It's just like turned up to 11. It was always like, hey, he's the fastest guy through the neutral zone. And now it's like, hey, he still is, but oh my God, it's a little faster. Like everything just seems that much more elevated. And I think what's so impressive about this, and if we want to talk about, you know, discounts or the opposite, is what he's doing in a condensed season. You know, having to get up for all these games in a shorter time span when you wouldn't have your legs about you. Super impressive to be engaged this often to put up that sort of consistent number. It's been a lot of fun to watch, and he deserves every bit of credit he gets.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Hey, Justin, great stuff as always, man. Keep up the good work, whether it's on television.ca or on Hockey Central, when you spend time with us, and we're appreciative of that.
Absolutely, guys. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
You as Thanks. Well. That is Justin Bourne joining us here. We get the text in saying, I'd be racking up points too. No, you wouldn't. But the texter says, I'd be racking up points too if I was playing garbage teams like Vancouver and Ottawa 8 times a year. Matthews and McDavid.
Bottom feeders in it in terms of top competition, like Detroit, Columbus. Okay, so why haven't players in Carolina racked up this many points? Because they're playing them 9-10 times this season. You've got Vegas, or Vegas, Colorado. Like, you talked about LA, San Jose, Anaheim. I'm sorry, but I mean, night in and night out, they're not exactly the best competition either. New Jersey and Buffalo and Philadelphia, even to a point. Like, each division has bottom feeders that star players can put up points against. It just happens that McDavid's doing it in the North Division, where all our eyes are on it.
I will agree with those, because I feel like this as well, that there are fewer top-tier teams in the North Division than any other division. Like, Toronto is a top-tier team, and after that, I'm not sure we can apply that. Like, there's upper middle class, and then there's lower middle class, but there's not a lot of, like, bottom-barrel NHL hockey teams. The Canucks right now, it's a difficult situation because of the number of injuries, because of coming out of COVID, because of the compact schedule. But this isn't a Vancouver team that you've seen for most of the year. Like, they've offered much more resistance for most of this season than they're able to offer right now because of their lineup. Ottawa's playing hard. Like, Ottawa is a better bottom team than you'll find at the bottom of other divisions.
Buffalo's playing better right now, but maybe a Detroit or an Anaheim right now. Scott, have you looked at the standings? Like, the bottom of the standings? Because obviously Vancouver's going to get a high lottery pick. Calgary, middle of the road probably, maybe can jump up a little bit if they have some luck on their hands in terms of the draft lottery. But Buffalo is 37 points. Don't look now. Buffalo's trying to make a climb to not be last in the league. They are 2 points back of Anaheim right now. Vancouver is only 4 points out of being last in the NHL. They've lost 6 straight. They still have 9 games to go. They got to play 2 more games against Edmonton. Who knows what those games against Calgary down the stretch may be? I mean, maybe that's where you get some victories and you can, I guess, I don't know. Do fans want them to move up in the standings? I mean, the players want to win, but do the fans even want them at this point? Because in terms of have they had draft lottery in the past? No. Luck in the past? No, because they've always somehow managed to fall below where they actually should have been. So I don't know what fans want, to see some victories down the stretch or see them fall further down in the standings. Because right now they're falling, and they're falling quick.
Someone else says, I think the Canucks were crap at the start, middle, and now the end. Pump some more tires, Scotty. Well, they were egregious in terms of turnovers at the beginning of the season. That I agree with. And their goaltending wasn't there. Middle of the season, they were tough. They were tough out. When COVID hit, they were a tough out.
They were struggling to win, were they not, though? I have to go back and look at
that. March was a pretty decent month for the Vancouver Canucks. It wasn't exciting hockey. It wasn't real fun to watch. But it was one of those, they're actually playing quite well in the wake of losing Elias Pettersson for the month of March. Then COVID hit. They got the slight bump coming out of it with a couple of wins over Toronto. 3 of their first 4 games they win. And now the attrition of the season has certainly caught up with them, and there's just not enough talent on the roster right now.
Hey, I got my answer, Scott. Keep losing games in Vancouver, this texter says. We'll get the first overall pick this season finally. There you go. That's where their fans want.
We'll find out who that might be, at least in the estimation of one person who's evaluating the U18s. Josh Bell is going to join us in the last hour of the program today. We'll get you caught up on some of the prospects who are going to be drafted this year and a couple who are going to be drafted 2 years from now. Man, there's a couple of guys who are having fantastic tournaments, including Connor Bedard. What's halfway between Calgary and Vancouver? The answer might surprise you. We'll get into it next right here on Rintoul and Sermon.